Thank you. Deputy Minister, we sincerely sorry. According to Chair, they were not aware that they were to be called urgently for the stress plan and give the feedback on the budget debate that took place last week. But they are to finish it any time, and Chair said we can start the presentation. They will definitely going to join us together with the whip in another 10 or 15 minutes. If it's correct for you, Deputy, because we don't know whether you're about to leave or what.
Thank you. Chair. We are going to proceed with the presentation because we are here to fulfill our obligation in terms of the legislature, of the constitution, to account to Parliament for what this entity does. The DBSA is one of those entities that belong to the Treasury family, one of those development finance institutions. We will be taking the committee through the annual report of the financial year 2009-10. The team led by the chief executive will be introduced by the chief executive, Mr. Paul Baloyi. But Chair, a few words on the bank. I must say that, as you would see in the report, that the bank has again exceeded most of its developmental targets for the year under review. The bulk of the bank's efforts went to the core area of the mandate, one of the key aims being to ensure stability within local government in areas where the bank has invested tremendously. The level of disbursements made by the bank in this year under review were quite exceptional, both in terms of direct balance sheet financing and indirect financing effected by unlocking government's municipal infrastructure grants. This reflects the bank's role in technical capacity building in the public sector, which has been expanded rapidly through direct hands-on support of infrastructure delivery at local government level, particularly in poor municipalities with weak human and institutional capacity. We have agreed on major programs and started to operationalize them in collaboration with various ministries, local governments, and key departments that have specific mandates. To mention one of the initiatives, as you know, that the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs is one of our key strategic partners in this area. We are looking at strengthening those relations. There are quite a number of areas where there will be changes going forward. I do not want to get into what the chief executive is going to do and what members have already read in the report. I want to take it that since members have the report, I have a number of times indicated that I'm looking forward to a day where we would come before the committee and not even do a presentation and take questions because members have gone through the report. Without wasting time, I'm going to ask the chief executive to take us through the report. Over to you, chief. If you could start. start by introducing the team and then get on to the panel phase.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
I will start by introducing the executive team that I brought with. On my right, I've got Peter Tilleray, who is the CFO, Chief Financial Officer. Then I've got Paul Kibuka, who is the Managing Director of the Development Fund, which deals with most of the capacity building interventions. Then I've got Admasu Tadesa, who deals with the international business financing outside South Africa. And then next to him, I've got the Board Secretary, Batobile. And then I've got Luda Mashaba, who deals with the funding of local government in South Africa. And then I've got our chief internal audit, Romeshni. Chair, I think to continue on where the deputy minister ended, if I can go to slide two. I'll just give an overview, and then I'll ask the two of my executives to just present the details of the bank's achievement. What we've opted to do was, apart from the position that the minister stated that we take the information as read, we selected specific areas of relevance that we will then present formally to the committee. The first slide is in this respect the areas on which the bank is generally measured, which is contained in our corporate scorecard, which entails the bank focusing on developmental impact, which loosely translated means the value creation that we do to our overall constituents and the beneficiation thereof. And then the second item where we get measured on is the sustainability of the institution itself, both financially in terms of viability and also the sustainability of the interventions that the bank actually does. And then we've got the bank's capabilities.
Sorry, CEO. Honorable members, the report that I've given to you is the wrong report. It hasn't been sold. The other one is just quickly doing the printing for you. So I think it's better to focus on the slide. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And then the last item there is the organizational capability, which deals with the organization, our ability to keep the organization abreast of development and its capabilities overall. On the next slide, Chairperson, we present to you the organization's delivery framework, which outlines what are the key departments that are in there. We've got at the middle of the block, the one that we define as being client-facing, which is Southern Operations, which is headed by Samuel Mashaba, as I indicated, that deals specifically with funding and other interventions in the local government area. Then we've got the Investment Banking Division, which deals with funding state-owned entities and other institutions of government. And then the International Division, which deals with activities of the bank outside South Africa. Then we've got the Development Fund, which is in essence a separate entity. In there we do the capacity deployment, development and deployment, rural development, community development and facilitation. In that entity, that's where we provide grants to municipality, and that's where Sienta Manje in principle is housed. And then we've got the development planning, which deals with policy research, development planning, advisory, and other information that from time to time government, broadly speaking, would approach the bank for assistance on. And then on the same slide, you'll see our governance framework and the support structures at the bottom of the slide, which contains risk, finance, human capital, and other support divisions. We are structured in terms of governance like most you expect in any company, where we've got specific committees that deals with the detail of what the board would seek to understand of the group, and then we then have got the board at the top of the actual. What I'm going to do, Chair, is to begin to deal with the substance of what the bank achieved. And to begin that, we'll deal with the developmental impact, and I'll ask Paul Kibuka, who is the Managing Director of the Development Fund, to just take us through a few slides that just deals with the impact that the bank achieved for the year under review.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honourable members, Sienta Manje is now deployed in 199 municipalities. an increase from the 172 we reported at the end of 08-09 financial year. As indicated on the slide, since the major municipalities are significantly B3 and B4 low capacity municipalities, which are mainly project consolidated rural nodes, as well as easy business municipalities identified by the president. The total number of employees has increased from 97 in 06-07 to 511 in 08-09 and about 614 in 09-10. The year-on-year increase has been driven mainly by the recruitment and deployment of artisans in the preparation for the rollout of the Municipal Infrastructure Operations and Maintenance Program. But we also experienced a decline in the number of young professionals due to absorption as permanent employees in municipalities, which is in line with the initial YP retention policy to build capacity in low capacity municipalities. The technical deployees, Chairperson, continue to comprise 68% of the deployed experts in line with the national priority of addressing the eradication of infrastructure backlogs. Share, MIG release, and expenditure have been doubling year on year in line with the increase in the Division of Revenue Act allocations to the Manje municipalities, but also in line with the increase in our deployments and the number of municipalities supported. The growth in MIG expenditure is also due to the increase in the number of bulk water and sanitation projects implemented by deployees carrying huge MIG and CAPEX expenditure budgets. These were mostly in Gauteng, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal provinces. Here the program is managing a total of 5,810 technical and non-technical projects. 60% of these are technical physical infrastructure projects, and 40% are non-technical projects, which is an increase of 31% from the 08-09 financial year. Among the technical projects, roads have continued to be the single sector at 24%, with the highest number of projects in the program. This is due to the fact that since the major municipalities are rural, I need roads to integrate access to basic services. Chair, on-job training of municipal officials by Sinzamanje in finance, technical and planning expertise is considered one of the major sustainability aspects of the program. The total figure exceeded the annual targets by 20%. Going forward, the performance against this indicator will be dependent on the levels of vacancy rates in the Sinzamanje municipalities. Here, during the 2019 financial year, Sinzamanje completed a total of 1,237 infrastructure projects. The completion of these projects resulted in 613,000 households connected to water and 513 to sanitation. A significant proportion of the projects were in the provinces of Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and KwaZulu-Natal, which are provinces still with sizable water and sanitation backlogs. In KwaZulu-Natal, the majority of projects completed were rural schools and clinics, water and sanitation projects managed by deployees that are deployed at the regional offices of the Department of Water Affairs. In Limpopo and Eastern Cape, projects were mainly connections of rural households implemented by deployees on behalf of municipalities. Here, the Sinzamanje program has, through deployment of financial experts in 94 local municipalities, supported the government campaign of operations cleaning audit and compliance with the 16 priority areas of the Municipal Finance Management Act, improving the quality of audit opinion from one category to another, namely from advanced to disclaimer to qualified and ultimately unqualified, but also within category, resulting in the reduction of the Auditor General credits. During the last financial year, a total of 67% of the Sinzamanje municipalities with financial experts recorded an improvement in the quality of audit reports year on year. 32% chairs are shown on the slide of the 94 municipalities had improved audit opinion from one category to another, while 35% of the 94 municipalities reduced the number of audit queries from the previous financial year. As members will see in the annual report, our highlights last financial year was in Gauteng province, where our finance deployee, working with the municipal officials, led the Ekurhuleni Metro to its first unqualified audit report. Here, during the 2009-10 financial, the fund crowded in 181 million as part of the implementation of the DF initiatives in the different municipalities. In addition to municipalities, the local government sector and government departments have significantly supported the funding of DF operations. In terms of the Vulindlela academic training...
Sorry, I think you need to go a bit slower because since you don't have, the members they don't have, they're trying to catch up and drive. If you can just slow your speed.
Thanks, Chair. I'll go slow, Chair. Chair, in terms of the Vulindlela academic training, the total number of delegates trained almost doubled year on year. 67% of the delegates trained were referred by deployees from the Sinzamanje municipalities, depicting a consistently increasing alignment between the Sinzamanje program and the Vulindlela Academy training, but also an increased outreach by the Academy to Sinzamanje municipalities. Likewise, Chair, the number of delegates trained in the SADC region increased by almost 400% year on year, indicating an acceleration in donor-funded training through the Pan-African Capacity Building Program, which is a partnership between the DDSA, the French Development Bank, and the IDC. Chair, with your permission, I'll hand over to the CFO to take us through the financial aspects. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. I'll spend the next few minutes just highlighting the financial measures and the financial, broad financial results without trying to go through the actual balance sheet and income statement, which is contained in the annual report itself. We start off by measuring the financial impact that the bank has on the ground. That's surely where our success also lies. And one can see that this is measured. The first two components thereof is the investments that are made in infrastructure development, which is indicated by the lower part of the chart. And then, of course, money that flows from the income statement, which is money that exits the balance sheet on a non-recoverable basis, which is in the form of grants and other expenses, the activities that my colleague referred to previously. We found that the economic conditions surely had an impact on the South African economy for the year, despite that the bank still managed to disburse in the region of 8.3 billion rand, which is slightly down on previous year, but it's reflective, as one can later see, of the ability that the public sector and municipalities especially had to actually take up loans and actually afford the repayments, and that is why the activities of the Development Fund became crucial. Having said that, though, the top part, the increase in development expenditure, exiting the income statement, went up by in the order of 20%, and that money was duly spent in assisting mainly municipalities and actually building capacity to take up future loans as we go forward.
So, with your permission, just to create a degree of clarity on the slide number 14, what we're evidencing there, if you look from 2005 and 6, that at the top there, we started from 226 million rand to 550 million. This is money that we don't pay a dividend to government, but out of the income that we generate, we spend it voluntarily on municipality assistance, by our grant, sending employees, etc. Over and above the funding that's in brown, that happens. So just put that into perspective. When you talk about exiting the income statement, we just give it to the municipality system, generally on where there was poor capacity and where there's need for grant funding.
Thank you, Steve. I will also unpack that amount further on as well to give a little bit more clarity and detail as to how that money is spent on the ground. If we move on to the next slide, what we then do is combine the effect that the bank has in terms of the money invested, second of all, the money spent in terms of grant and capacitation, together with the municipal infrastructure grants that have been unblocked to create the total impact on the ground. And we can see from 2007 the impact being around 4 billion once we add up all three components, in the region of 17 billion in 2010, and the municipal infrastructure grants being 8.9 billion, as my colleague previously indicated, growing 18% from the previous year. And that is the number that we continue and strive to grow going to the future. Chairperson, what the CEO was speaking about is the money that we say we give in the form of grants and other expenditure. This is money that we would pay in lieu of not paying dividends to our shareholder. The agreement is that we would then spend this money on that. And in this case, we spent 550 million, and without me going into detail, there is a split contained in the graph. The bulk of the money going into grants, a large portion into research, and then also in terms of the Nzimande, which is the bank's contribution to the Nzimande to the top. The agreement, as you saw, is that we contribute 30% to all activities in that. Just to give an indication on the next slide, what it means for the financials. We previously targeted, if one adds the normal dividend policy, we targeted 45% as a distribution of surplus in this kind of activity. And one can see, Chairperson, that from 2006, we moved from 23%, which is contained in the annual report, to 33 and 49% in 2008-09, and it was moved to about 67%. So it's clear that the bank also focused a lot of attention incapacitating municipalities, and especially municipalities that could not afford repayment of loans. And in future, these municipalities now will build capacity so that they can take investments in the form of loans. One can see from the bottom graph that expenses remain controlled. So the bank has at least tried to keep the expenses below inflation and controlled in order to make more available for distribution to municipalities and so on. If we continue, and I'm trying to keep a slower pace here, on the next graph, it's just an indication of what I'm going through in detail. One can see in South Africa, again, the bottom left-hand graph, indicating in terms of approval, the economic conditions that face the country as far as public sector municipalities are concerned. So we did find a slowdown. Having said that, the disbursements at least did stay stable for the year. On the international side, we did see a lot of time and work spent on gaining more approvals and commitments, again, given the conditions of the SADC region at large. And we expect a lot of those commitments to disperse. We're already seeing them disperse in the 2011 year. If you look at the diversity of the book, which is contained under the next graph, again, Chairperson, I'm not going to go through the detail. If one looks at the South African approvals, so these are deals that have been approved through the structures of the bank, for disbursement either during that year or for future disbursement. If one adds up on the social investments on the left-hand graph, one will still get to around 80% in terms of social investment. So that's still focusing on roads, water, sanitation, housing, and drainage, and energy, and water, and so on. Whereas you look at the international side, you can see the focus is around building economic, which is again part of the strategy of the bank and as far as the region at large. If we move on to the next structure, again, it's just the geographical focus, which I'm not going to go through in detail, just gives an indication where the bulk of investment and approvals is taking place. One can see that Eastern Cape is becoming a key focus area, where there's a demand for investment at the moment as well. On the right-hand side, international, again, just giving an indication of the country that that receive support to the DBSA.
So I think if I may just elaborate on this one. When you look at the slide, you may say the distribution should, in terms of the need of the country, be directed to where the poorest are sitting. When you look at this, you'll see that it tends to go into the provinces that are able, like Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, in terms of the bulk. But what this slide doesn't show you is the other 8.9 billion rand that we facilitate through grants, which is where we actually fund poor municipalities that can afford funding. So this is driven by municipalities with absorptive capacity that can take funding. The ones that can't, we give them grants combined with the fiscal grant that we get and facilitate. And that's not reflected here. That's about 8.9 billion, which we spoke about in the previous slide. So it may be misleading if you look at the distribution. But if you overlay it with what we do in terms of grants, et cetera, you'll see that the greatest portion of the funding actually went to most of the poor municipalities as such.
Thank you, Steve. If we move on to the next slide again, in terms of the disbursement, this is actually cash investment. Just looking at the slide there, for some reason there's something that's creeped in onto the right-hand pie chart there. But the municipalities, you will see in the annual report, still make up 49% of the disbursements for the year going forward. And during the year under review, my apologies. And together with public sector, it makes up 64% of the disbursement, which is the focus for the year. Chair, I don't wish to unpack the per sector because it's a very diverse profile, as one can see. If you move on to the next slide, in terms of the loan book, the current exposure that the bank has, again, it's an indication from the right-hand chart that municipalities make up 50% together with another 16% for public utilities and education added to that. If one looks at the left-hand bottom bar chart, one can see that social infrastructure still is the primary focus of the book that is reflected as investment in the DBSA annual report. Thank you, Chair. I will hand back to you on this one.
Chair, understanding that what we are delivering today is purely the history, the previous year, in terms of done with what we'll just give. Just a glimpse in terms of where we're going as an organization into the future. And we depart from, as always, what the capability of the bank is. If you look at the slide that you're showing, I think traditionally most DFIs would only focus on funding, generally, both locally and internationally. Most of them would focus on funding. The DBSA, unlike any other DFI, over the 25 years has evolved, and it's acquired a multiple skill base which enables it to extend its value chain from pure identifying of the need right up to operating and maintenance of that through the deploy of tender money. Arising from this extensive delivery framework and in discussion and consultation with our governor, the Minister of Finance, if we go to the next slide, what we are contemplating to do after having consulted ministries and government, our own minister and local authority, is to provide an extensive coverage of delivery and acceleration of infrastructure. What is predicated is recognizing that as a bank, dealing at institutional level, doing one project at a time, probably does not give us the desired impact generally that we would aspire to achieve. And we are contemplating launching scalable projects that will see massive developments coming across in terms of a national framework as opposed to institutional or municipality level. The focus that we are looking to do is aligned to what government itself has focused on, and this deals with key sectors that where we've got challenges: water and sanitation, energy, transport, RTT, health, education, and human settlement are the key priorities. This year, I can report that we've already started with health, flowing from our roadmap that we contributed to government, and have selected specific interventions that we have agreed with the Minister of Health and that we begin to roll out, which covers PPPs across the country and revitalization of hospitals and other initiatives that we're helping the department with. At the same time, we've made proposition to the Department of Water Affairs, where it's being looked at, and the idea there being that we should begin to address the water and sanitation issues in the country on a national program as well. Equally, we've made presentations to the Department of Education, and hopefully over time we'll be able to find common ground where we can then begin to roll out some of those schools and that are in dire need of revitalization. In the same context, we've had discussion with human settlement on building of housing. Now, the speed at which we can do this will depend on the state of readiness of each department and ministry. And those discussions are ongoing at the moment. As I indicated, the health we've already started implementing. Hopefully when we report next year, we'll begin to demonstrate how far we have gone with these initiatives in changing and upscaling the delivery of the organization going forward. Chairperson, I think we'll pause for now and open, with the permission of the Deputy Minister, the floor for questions.
Thank you very much. As you are aware that I was sitting on the wrong chair, can I kindly hand over to Mr. Mahomadi, the chair of the Standing Committee on Finance. Thank you.
I'm not sure why you think you're the wrong check. You should continue. That's right. Now that you've decided to distance yourself, it's okay. More on a formal note, Deputy Minister, let me just and honorable members and representatives of TPSA, I must first apologize. I was held up in a meeting from half past 8 here in Parliament for another progress, and I couldn't unfortunately come out of that progress much earlier. So I just wanted to put that on record so that it's not like we don't take your presentation and your visit to Parliament very, very seriously. So I thought it should be recorded, Deputy Minister, that it was what in the world of economics you normally term unavoidable and unforeseen circumstances. So, yeah. Deputy Minister, you had your mic on.
Thank you, Chair. I think now that we have made the presentation, as I indicated earlier, maybe the most important part for us to respond to questions that committee members might have. But as we would know that you know, most of the report talks to the work that the DBSA does with our local government in particular. But there is also international work, as you have seen in some of the slides, that the DBSA does, which Mr. Tedeschi is responsible for. There is a section in the report that talks to that, and I would imagine if the committee also would want to ask questions on that. Not intentional that we do not respond extensively on that one, only in the slides, but in the report, there is extensive reporting on that area as well. But, the DBSA is here to respond to questions that members might have on the report before Parliament. Thanks.
Honourable members, it is our chance to interact with the presentation.
But also to apologize from our part, Chair, that the presentation, we proceeded with the presentation because the presentation we had here was not in color. So it actually makes it very difficult for members to engage with some of the things, and we say the one in blue, and in the presentation it's not blue. So we wanted to make sure that what is blue on the presentation is also blue on the one that members have. But also we had to reduce the number of slides because we know that members of Parliament, having read a thick document, should also not be burdened with another voluminous presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Luyange, you'll be followed by Honourable Koranwo, Honourable Madamini.
Morning, and thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members, and the leadership, Deputy Minister, and officials from DBSA. Let me first appreciate the presentation summarized, but talking to what DBSA is doing. Chair, mine is an aspect that relates more to the local sphere of government in terms of capacity building by the institution. Chair, the planning capacity in municipalities remain a challenge. I would therefore want to check from DBSA as to whether in that sphere of government, do they come across the necessary and trainable capacity that is already there that they develop? At some stage, the person would be informed that one of the ward councillors or a councillor has gone to Pretoria for a training, and you know it for a fact that that councillor cannot even write one. And then you are tempted to say, I don't understand whether this person is going to be able to consume what is going to be actually fed to him or her at that level. Then the other issue is around the M&E strategy of DBSA in terms of ensuring that the funding that they disperse to the local authorities and including the provincial sphere, especially in the Eastern Cape, on infrastructure funding. Is there any mechanism that they monitor and evaluate the usage of such funds? I'm asking this question, Chairperson, because of the indication by the Auditor General, where the province of the Eastern Cape is in the red in terms of following the Public Finance Management Act, as well as issues of procurement in terms of having the necessary documentation to support their spending. Then lastly, it's an issue that relates to surplus. There was a mention of surplus. I know we're dealing with a bank here, and the bank will always look at the profit. Now, when you have a bank working with government, at the government level, we are not worried much of any profits or savings. But what we want to see is the impact of any spending. Thank you.
Honorable Coronel, that's not a question, and you would respond after the first batch of questions.
I do not know whether I can ask questions about the financial statement. Or is that okay to ask questions about that? Can I just ask, I see in the statements that the loans past due, but not individually impaired, is down from 2009. If you compare it, it's down in 2010, if you compare it to 2009. But they say there in 2009, there was 5.151.23 not yet due. Now, what's the meaning of that? I just want to know what's the meaning of that. And then, just interesting, you know, in the height of the Great Recession, 2009, your expenses on non-executive directors, the board, were 2.388. And then in the midst of that Great Recession, you up the director's remuneration. Now, I know you're doing it in terms of the policy that's in, there's a guideline in the Act, but you up it almost, you double it, more than double it. So I just want to know, is that fair? You know, there's a huge outcry in terms of, you know, if you can, in terms of these sort of remuneration. And then I also see that Professor Figati, his contract ended on the 31st of December, but still in 2010, according to our financial statement, he's being paid 337. So I just want to know, is that a mistake, and should it be that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if I'm audible because the mic seems to be quite far. Page 4, slide 4, CN Zaman, the project. I just need a clarity, Chair. I realize that the asterisk there, they indicate that in whatever municipality, it's whether the finance support was given or a technical support was given or planning was given. Now I'm looking at KZN, where it shows that only 10 municipalities were assisted with finance. And the rest was technical.
Can I just confirm this slide?
Am I right with the asterisk? Is it slide 4, please? CN Zamanje.
Okay.
Now I'm saying I don't know if I do understand the asterisk quite well, what they mean. Because if I look in, for an example, the KZN, it indicates that the financial support was given to 10 municipalities, and the rest was technical. YP. YP. What is that?
Young professionals, yes.
So it was only 10 municipalities. Now, what is the meaning to that? If we've got a training capacity, what the young professionals are those on learnership? What is that? Yeah. What is that? Are those the learnership? And how do you determine? What criteria do you use to place such resources to each municipality? What criteria do you use? And how do you monitor that criteria, whatever that you have given to each municipality? How do you monitor it? And then the other one is, your monitoring tool is indeed effective and consistent. Why do we have rollover funds? And why grants are not conditional grants? I mean, the grants that you provide sometimes are not being used by the municipality. Because if the monitoring was then continuous, some indication were to be given to the municipality that, by the way, you are understanding. So which means what the CEO said to us, that your mandate as the institution is to ensure that you provide operation, you do the maintenance thereof, and then I say, now why is that? What is happening? Is the problem with the municipality, or is it because the working conditions between your institution and the municipality is not what we expect to be? Chair, we'll call the thing.
You can respond.
I will lead the response to the question.
I will leave the response to the questions, and then I'll ask each of the examiners to fill in where I think I need a bit more detail. The first question was around the planning capacity at local authority level, and the plan being, given the state of lack of capacity in municipalities, do we first assist them with planning? Secondly, do we, are the people on the ground that actually get trained for them to keep up the planning? The planning roles that they have to do in terms of their roles. If you look at slide number 7, I think there we highlight two categories of Tendamanje interventions out of 3,818 projects that we hold. You'll see that we split them into technical projects, which means the actual infrastructure itself, delivery. And then there's non-technical, which relates to, for lack of a better word, the soft skills such as planning, procurement processes, systems, financing, etc., which are categorically different. You'll see that at the top there, we have made provision for planning for technical projects. Through those interventions, not only do we just do the job for them, we try and pass on skills to municipalities, both in terms of making sure that the system, the methodology, and also one body that sits in there to actually care for the job. This is further reflected in slide 8. Which tells you the on-the-ground training. This is when you enter a municipality, you find people that are there that we don't ignore them. They actually get trained themselves. And then furthermore, if you see the totality of what Tendamanje is trying, at slide number 12, When we talk about 11,366, it's the number of interventions, the number of people that are actually trying. So a person might come three times for planning, maybe for finance, etc. So those are the interventions that we do across municipalities. So if you therefore realize our training is quite extensive in that, and it covers all aspects that the municipality would generally be a need for. And we do emphasize the fact that we follow through to make sure that what we've trained them for, they actually go and use on the ground. And we'll talk a little bit about monitoring systems that to how do we track the impact of the interventions that we do. And then the second question asked by the member was the use of funds of profits, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. I think the bank, you're quite correct in saying that we don't generally emphasize or focus on profit. We're not an organization that's looking for return on equity to the shareholder or maximizing profits for that. If we were, I can say to you without any hesitation that the bank would be much bigger in terms of assets and profit than it is at the moment. What we have done over the years is we've spent that profit voluntarily, not because government has asked us and not because there's a measure that government must do this, voluntary ourselves, and this voluntary aspect drive that we push is driven by not us simply deciding, okay, we're going to give so and so money. It's because the constituents, the municipalities, provincial authorities, come to us and ask us to help them with interventions when they're in a crisis. Good examples of that was KZN, where I think we had 80 kids that died because of polluted water. We had to go and fix that intervention. Recently, there was the Buffalo municipality where the state of person had made certain undertakings and they couldn't carry it. The ministry in Kofta asked us to intervene. We went and intervened in that regard. This is utilizing the bank's money, not necessarily the fiscus. And where we can, we then go to the fiscus and augment what we have. So traditionally, our profits, therefore, are dedicated to this. Therefore, you'll see that our bottom line is not getting fat, it's rather getting thick. And the money that we dedicate in terms of grants, capacity building, is growing in that regard. We've adopted that stance deliberately, but carefully planned to ensure that the bank, nevertheless, in spite of that, remains sustainable. To do that, you'll observe that the minister, in terms of the drive that we've taken, has equally agreed to back us by supporting us by increasing our callable capital. The callable capital means exactly that. In the event that through the interventions that we do, spending our profits, giving more money to municipalities voluntarily, we then get into problem, and most importantly, taking greater risk and funding some of the entities that generally shouldn't be funded by commercial terms. If we then lose money and the bank goes into distress, we're covered by government in the circle. But thus far, we've never had an occasion to go to government and demand for that money. We were given about 5 million rand worth of capital when it started. Over the 25 years, we've only drawn 200 million rand of that, and the bank has grown to date to about close to 18 billion rand worth of capital in terms of the plowback that we've achieved. In that context, we still had of the original capital given to the bank 4.8 billion that we have not accessed. During the year, last year, over the past 2 years, we agreed with the minister that we will not again access it. We will increase its capacity and we'll increase our productivity outside and look to other interventions to ensure that in spite of the global financial crisis that we have, we can be able to access that funding at cheaper markets so we can pass that benefit to the municipalities. And those strategies are continuing at the moment. And that, hopefully, is what we're going to continue to do. I hope I have answered all the questions. And then,
what was your initial capitalization?
5 billion rand is what was issued.
Yeah.
What was authorized. And then we only, over the 25 years, have accessed 200 million rand of that. We haven't taken the other 4.8 billion rand. And the bank has been able to grow out of the 200 to its present level today.
Of
18 billion rand. In terms of the capital.
Good.
And then the other question was then, how do we ensure that the money that the municipalities get are used appropriately? We have quite an integrated and intensive monitoring program that we use to ensure that the funds. That's why we're able to, because we've got people on the ground that are trained. And we're not talking about people that have got matric. These are CAs that we source. These are engineers with experience that are qualified, that we send them, who sits there and plan the project, plan the program, monitor, and they know that they carry the responsibility, no policy basis concern, to ensure that money is spent appropriately. To date, in the life of Kinder Manager, we've not had an instance where any of the projects that we've provided oversight on have been subject of media publicity for money having been misspent. You know, so those are tracked quite diligently. We can't say that we're able to sort out all the problems in the municipalities. We do. I think this was supposed to be a targeted intervention. It can't replace government. So most of the other things are done by government for that matter. Where we can, we do assist. So it's a targeted intervention. And then, Chair, I think I'm going to allow the CFO to deal with the financial questions that were raised, and then I'll revert back with the answers to the others.
I think one of the things that the Chief Executive was asked by the member is what criteria do you use in deploying such assistance to municipalities. I think it's important because, as you would know, that municipalities have different capacities, and in the banks, working with those municipalities, they would identify a particular need for a particular municipality, be it a need for, like he has indicated with his young professionals, for a CA in some municipalities because of their size, because of their capacity, it may not necessarily require a CA, but or an engineer or whatever other capacity required. But I mean, as they work with the municipalities, they are able to identify the need for the particular municipality. Some would require a particular skill that they would then deploy. But also it is up to that municipality after that intervention whether the municipality is then able to actually take that professional beyond the intervention, because one of the things is sustainability of that intervention. And I would imagine members are concerned with the sustainability because it doesn't help to have that assistance only when the DBSA is there and when the DBSA leaves, that capacity collapses. So, I mean, it's one of the things that they identify what the need of that municipality is, and they assist the municipality in proceeding with that professional. I don't know whether you want to add, but I think that was the question with regards to what criteria do you use to deploy that kind of capacity.
I think on that note, Paul, I think it'll deal with the question.
Your mic.
Whilst the question is still hot, can you deal with the question asked by the member on KZN? That was the first thing, and the meaning of YPs, which will link into what the minister just said as to how we create sustainability, and how do we monitor our monitoring system to ensure the grants are actually applied in line with that. And then I'll respond to the question as to why, in some instances, there's still money that gets returned to the fiscus in spite of that.
Thanks, CD. As the Honourable Minister and the CE have indicated earlier, the decision to deploy expertise is really a request from the municipality directly. Over time, we have built governance structure, which is the Sinzamanje National Working Committee, which is a partnership between National Treasury, COCTA, SALGA, ourselves, Water Affairs. And what the process that we normally go through is a municipality identifies a need and submits a request to the Department of Cooperative Governance, and the department forwards that request to the Sinzamanje program. We've developed a tool which is called the Sustainable Municipal Reporting Tool. That tool is based on the People, Planet, Prosperity WSSD concept. And we utilize that tool to go to the municipality to assess the needs on the ground, to confirm exactly whether the request they made matches the technical needs as espoused in the assessment. After the assessment, we confirm and decide on the specific area. We normally have three technical areas of expertise: engineering. Some of the interventions need finance, other interventions need planning. But as the Honourable Member indicated, municipalities, as we picked up, struggle to spend because of lack of capacity. And what the tool does is to assess which areas of capacity are lacking. And we always have four main areas, either human or institutional
or implementation or finance. And based on that, as I indicated, then we decide where to intervene. Experts, when they're deployed in any of those respective areas of need, they are paired with young professionals. At the beginning of the Sinzamanje program, when we were first deployed in municipalities, our expectation was that the sustainability component of the program will be driven by on-job skill transfer between the experts and the officials that they find in the municipalities. But as the honorable members have indicated earlier, when we entered the municipalities, we realized that capacity is very low and that the vacancy rates were very high. So our expectation of getting officials to transfer skills onto using the on-job skill transfer approach did not materialize. So what we did was to work through a model that would pair our experts with the young professional in their own respective fields. And the intention was that the experts would transfer skills to the young professional who would be either graduating in engineering or finance or planning, with a view that when the time for exit of the young of the expert is due, then the young professional will be left in the municipality. In the process, we also developed a structured young professional program, which would lead the young professionals to registration with their respective professional bodies. If he's an engineer, then would prepare him for registration with the Engineering Council of South Africa. If he's a planner, with SACPLAN. And if he's a finance expert, we developed in collaboration with National Treasury a national diploma in municipal finance. So what we see in KZN is an outcome of the request that we received, mainly in technical, but to ensure that the sustainability of our interventions, we also paired them with young professionals to make sure that these remain behind when ultimately the experts exit. What we use to monitor the deployments, Chair, year on year, when we get to agree on a deployment, what we begin with is to set up a performance plan, to prepare a performance plan for the expert, and that performance plan is linked to the business plan of the municipality to ensure that the expert's stay in the municipality is linked directly to the delivery aspects in terms of financial, technical planning, as the case may be. We have also developed what we call Project Portfolio Office Tool, which is a web-based tool that monitors what each of the experts does on a day-to-day basis against the projects in this performance plan. That web-based tool is loaded onto the system, and that's exactly the efficacy of the tool, in that it loads the performance plan of the expert onto the web-based platform, and we are able to monitor from time to time his performance against the targets and the key initiatives as agreed upon by either the CFO of the municipality if he's a finance deployee, or head of technical services if he's a technical deployee and the municipal manager. And lastly, Chair, we come back on a year basis using the sustainable municipal reporting tool to assess the performance of the deployee, and in that instance, we are trying to determine whether he's due for exit from that municipality. And based on the results of the sustainable municipal reporting tool, then we are able to negotiate and discuss with the municipal manager whether we should give ourselves an extra year or whether at that juncture we should exit. Thanks, Chair.
I think overall, the way we monitor Sinzamanje has improved significantly over the past year. We actually probably are the closest in terms of understanding what happens to municipality or the project that we manage, because we've got not only people on the ground, but we've got a live communication system, which enables us to know on a month-by-month basis what each deployer is doing, and they're managed quite closely. The most difficult challenge we've had is to ensure sustainability of each municipality going forward, given the challenges in placing skills there. And we've tried, I think, a number of interventions. The latest one that I think looks like it's got opportunities is the YPs, which is young professionals. which constitute CAs and young engineers that are qualified. And what they need to do, as you know, with doctors, they have to go through internships before they become doctors. So these YPs, young professionals, have got degrees in terms of engineering, but they still need to qualify as practicing engineers. We train them on the ground and pair them with seasoned engineers, and then monitor their progress, and then we help them through accreditation. And when they're accredited, we give them the opportunity to take them in as permanent employees. In some instances, we've been very successful in that regard. And it's quite, I think, how many do we have at the moment?
It's 30% of the entire companies and IPs have been absorbed by the ministry.
Yeah. How many are they in total?
In total, they are about
200 of them. So if we can have a hit rate of 50%, you know, it means we sort of almost 50% of municipalities in terms of client placement, and we monitor and close to make sure that actually happens. Chair, the other question that was raised was around the board remuneration. I think firstly the observations are correct, but the reasons thereof, I think firstly arise from the fact that since 2006, the bank fees, the board fees had never been reviewed, had never been increased. And therefore, we did a once-off adjustment in consultation with the minister at the time to match to what the current fees were. The other thing that shows an increase is because the number of the committees on which the board members were now sitting, we increased that. So the bulk fee that sees does not actually split into specific committees. So that also contributed to that. But fairly speaking, if you compare this to other boards, you'll find that these are actually quite lower. Generally, among state-owned entities and private boards, etc., and we've maintained that position for years. So the observation is quite correct. We did a one-off adjustment to catch up because we had not done anything since 2005-2006. The next financial question, Peter, you want to deal with that?
Okay, thank you. I want to explain the movement in the impairment of the loan, but if I may ask the members just for clarification before I do launch into not answering the question around the question around the amount you said, amount not due and 423. Maybe you could just help me with that specifically if I may.
On page 165, I just try to understand it, that in 2009, is it billions or millions, whatever, five was not yet due, and then in 2010, 4.4 is not due. I just want to understand what's the meaning of net not yet due, and why? You know, is it a favorable comparison between the 2 years or is it unfavorable?
Thank you, Chair. I think what I will say now will possibly add towards answering that question. So let me just briefly explain how we deal with impairments. The impairments are based on credit models that we work, and these are detailed credit models that we run with our credit division. And we base our credit decisions or impairment decisions based on probabilities. And the probability of default is firstly determined by a policy of a client missing a second consecutive repayment. That's the first thing. Once we then have agreed that the client has now missed his second repayment, we then classify the client as a potential default client, which means that the entire loan structure moves into the default book, and we then have specific actions in our workout unit to address that. So having said that, the first question is a general decrease in the loan risk reserve or the provision for default, the provision for impairment, is largely a result of two things. We were carrying a provision for a large one-off amount in the international division, which you will see was written off during the current year. And that had obviously reduced the requirements of the provision. And second of all, the rand strengthened significantly in the order from close to 10 rand to about 7 rand. So that obviously then resulted in a revaluation of the defaulted book sitting in the international division, and that accounted roughly for about 70. So that was the main reason for a general decrease in the reserve that we carried. The classification amounts not due and overdue. An overdue amount is when the client has now missed its repayment. It's an overdue amount. So if you and I, in terms of our normal lease of a vehicle, we would have to pay our lease vehicle this month. If we miss it, we then classify it as an overdue amount. amount not due in terms of the impaired book is that when we, if a client has missed the second repayment, we move the entire loan reserve into the impaired book. So the not yet due would be the amount that is not actually fallen due as of that date, but which we consider to be potentially impaired. And on that basis, we create the probability, and therefore we create the reserve based on that. I hope that answers the question.
Okay, I think that arises out of the nature of the client that we are dealing with. If you're dealing with a municipality, once they miss a payment, immediately the alarm bells ring.
And then the correct interpretation when it says now due
means that payment has not been paid. Not yet due means it hasn't fallen through for payment yet. So therefore it's still technically a line book. It's not impaired for that matter. I think there was another question that was raised around the process of degauging. Sorry, is there a follow-up question? Should I?
No.
Okay.
I
think Professor Figaji came off the main board, which is the CBSA Development Bank, and then he still played a role in terms of his continuing membership on the Development Fund, which is a separate entity. And this is a consolidated report, therefore it does reflect that. The other thing is the timing, because our financial year closes in March, and then, you know, his tenure ended post-March, so there might be, you know, a residual value that was then reflected.
Meanwhile, can you just give us the mic?
Your mic.
Allow us to speak.
it's a way of gagging you.
Yeah, I can see that. Maybe before Madlamini comes in. In your introduction, I think it's slide number 2. What we are saying, all that has been said by many institutions that are in the economic field, either reserve banks, national treasury, in terms of the fiscal outlook, the financial or the economic outlook. But you then say this corporate performance in 2009-2010 occurred in a difficult operating environment characterized by the high cost of capital, lack of confidence, and increased risk. The lack of confidence from which side, and why those things? Because it is very, very important for us to understand. Because from other institutions operating in a similar environment, when it came to the South African economy, the confidence has always been there. In fact, the minister last week had to say, in terms of projecting, moving forward. What we need to consider, South Africans, is that we have been managing a crisis that was not of our own. So the statement that you put here, for me, I just want to get clarity. The second issue is on slide number, I think most of the slides, particularly on analysis on development expenditure. I think I left my spectacles in a plane, so I'm struggling to see. Even in terms of the MIG that we unblocked, there is a very thin impact on the development expenditure. The disbursement and the MIG unlocked, and the impact in terms of development expenditure. Not the impact, but the size. And it goes also in terms of development expenditure, slide number 15. And when you look at slide number 16, the portion of the development expenditure
effort opposed to operational expenses is quite slide number 16, you can see. It's a sizable amount. But when you actually go into the disbursement, you don't see the same. They don't correlate. So, those are the two issues that I thought I picked up. Sorry, I've been borrowed some eyes here, so I've got the four eyes. If you look into 17, also development impact through infrastructure funding, the approvals are quite high. Commitments, maybe just to give us an explanation why the disparities, you know. You've got approvals quite high, disbursement at a particular level, disbursement and commitment, they are almost correlating, but the approvals are quite way out there. So, is it capacity issues or what that we're dealing with? Madlavi.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to do the follow-up regarding the YP. And because, Chair, I strongly believe that the bank, its core function is its development. That's why we call it the development bank, DPSA. When you look at the I think as an organizational framework, you look there under the implementer, and you see the rural development. Now, rural development is very broad. The government has got a plus minus 32 departments, I'm not too sure, but each and every department has got a function to ensure the rural development, because it's for everybody to do that. And you look at the key deliverables or the key priority areas of the bank, where the CEO mentioned, Mr. Baloyi mentioned, the water, the sanitation, ICT, energy. And you think about the rural development on the other side. Then you say, how does this key priorities marry the needs of the rural areas? How do you ensure that, because the needs of the rural areas are totally different than the need of, yes, water is one of them, sanitation is really indeed one of them, energy, which is electricity, is one of them, but it goes further than that. What about the schools that are debilitated? What about the kids that are under the tent? I mean, that are learning under the tent and there's lightning and they get struck by the lightning because they're using those ungovernized poles. That is the first thing. And then the YP. You know, unfortunately, in the introduction, I didn't get well. The executive that is dealing with Sienza Manje, capacity building in the municipalities. The country is where it is today, poor service, because of lack of skills, human capital skills, they are not there. And you have indicated that you have tried and you have now identified this program of YP, which will depend, I think the program depends with a particular sector, with engineering or what. But we are requesting the DPSA to take it further, because that is, it's like a drop in the ocean. Look, we have got about more than 200 municipalities. And they've only got 200 YPs that you have spread all over the country. So which means if you're taking a little summary or arithmetic, which was done by me, it's 1111111 in each municipality. So and we have only given us about 388 something. So can you focus on the human capital? Because if you focus on the human capital, I'm definitely sure that the country will save. That's why we don't have sustainability, and we're still not going to have the sustainability, because those councils that are there. Remember, our politicians, they do not have skills. They need to be empowered. And why then, when we've got an institution like the DBSA, we say to us, we've got Sienza, and Sienza spends 30% of the capital of the DBSA. Why don't you channel and invest to the human capital so that at the end of the day, we are sure that there is going to be a sustainability. Those YPs, they'll be doing monitoring more than implementing or hands-on. They'll be making sure that the people that are there, everything is done and it is done correctly. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, perhaps before the Chief Executive comes in, your first question regarding lack of confidence, I would imagine, is a general statement regard to in the wake of the economic crisis, the issue of risk aversion, particularly to emerging markets, was the general trend, and I must say it's in that context that the issue of lack of confidence is raised as a general comment towards. But again, as you would see in the report, that we say, despite that, the bank was able to actually acquit itself and weather the storm much better than the other institutions in the same league. The other point, we will, the Chief Executive and his team will talk to other matters, I mean, more technical matters. But the other point that Mandlamini raises with regard to two issues, the rural development and the issue of young professionals. Let me start with young professionals. Chair, I think this program has actually been very successful. Because particularly we're talking about the skills in very specialized areas. As has been mentioned, it's engineering mainly and the accounting skills. In a municipality, if you have one CA and one engineer, you know, you actually have addressed the most critical skills in a municipality. So even if it's one per municipality, I would imagine, in initial stages, that's the capacity. And in some municipalities, because of their size, as indicated, you do not require a CA in some municipalities because, one, they cannot afford to pay a CA. Two, because of the size of even their budget and their delivery capacity, they would not, they do not really. And one of the things in our engagement with the Chief Executive, he indicated that in some instances, you actually have to group municipalities. If you have one CA that would actually be able to service a number of those municipalities, you would actually go a long way in addressing the financial management capacity of those municipalities. The same with engineers, as you know that they are a very scarce skill. But also, it also depends on what the academic institutions, the number of these young professionals that the academic institutions are producing, because the bank's mandate is not to produce them, but is to take them and place them in municipalities that require the capacity and make sure that that skill continues to service that municipality going forward. So I must say, Chair, it might look a small figure, but it has gone a long way in addressing the problem. I must say, we still have a long way again to go. But we must also take into account what the mandate of the bank is. The issue of skills is but one of those that it actually imparts to municipalities. But more than that, the core mandate of the bank is not only that of building skills. It's to finance municipalities. It's to provide technical support. It is also to deal with issues. And in the rural areas, Chair, as you've heard in the report, and if you go into the report, you will see that rural areas have actually been the main beneficiaries of the bank's support. The area of grant funding mainly goes to those municipalities that require it. But the bank does not go out to municipalities to ask if they can help. It's municipalities that need to request the bank to provide the necessary support. Therefore, I think one of the things, and that is why we have said, having realized the importance of Sienza Manji, we are saying that the Department of Cooperative Governance should actually play a critical role in driving Sienza Manji, because they actually are in a position to be able to identify those municipalities that would require the assistance of the bank, and the National Treasury would provide oversight in terms of financial management, but in terms of identifying those municipalities that will require assistance, we're saying COGTA needs to lead in making sure that they are able to identify those municipalities, and then the bank plays. I did indicate earlier that there might be changes in the manner in which it is managed going forward, but Sienza Manji is one of those flagship programs of the bank that have actually proven very successful, but it is the sustainability thereof that we are saying needs to be strengthened. Thank you, Chair.
I think the difference is probably outside the issue of the crisis, and correctly said it, it was not about confidence in the country. I think South Africa sustained and went and performed very well against the crisis, because our financial sector remained quite strong based on the legacy effect of the prudency that we've gathered. But what happened is the tail end of the crisis, which pertains to the cost of liquidity and the risk aversion by institutions, is in fact that liquidity much higher than what the general would be. So therefore the stock gap moved quite considerably, which meant that we could not access the funding cheaply than we. So that's what I was saying in that context. So you raised the issue of the correlation in respect of the expenditure on the development expenditure and the disbursement system. Our expenditure on the development expenditure really pertains to largely the capacity building that we have. If you look at slide 14, you will see that the increase in the development expenditure as compared to slide 13, where it was 226 originally, to 550. If you correlate that with slide 14, you see that the green line has increased significantly. That's where the effort has been in terms of that expenditure. IT, 15, deployed, etc., you can see that that has increased significantly. So that's where the correlation is. The disbursement that we're talking in the brown is about financing, and that is solely governed by the financial structure of that municipality. Now, the category where we're focusing on does not have the absorption capacity to actually borrow. So what they benefit out of is they need to be enabled to access the fiscus, and that's where those resources have been spent. So in that context, you see the direct correlation. We could have chosen to not spend more money on the local expenses and just to show up our balance sheet. But in spite of that, I think we sacrificed and said, let's continue spending, even though we're going to eventually show lower profits than last year. We chose to spend that money because we realized that the impact and significance of what we're doing is much more material to the constituents that we serve. And in that context, it increased by about 37%, if I'm not mistaken, based on your figures against last year. And then there's the issue of the disparity on the approvals relative to the disbursement. That is inherent in the way in which development finance always happens. And sometimes because there's a huge one-off that we normally would do. I think last year we had about 15 billion rand of ESCOM, and then the year before there was about 4 billion rand or so of equity that we did. And it jumped. And some of those things are multi-year programs. So the fact that it may have been approved this year, it's then expanded over a number of years, 3 to 5 years. Therefore, the disbursement then kicks and follow through over the years that this comes. In some instances, it can happen that we've approved, but when we go in terms of the tendering on the pricing aspect of it, particularly this year, we've seen a significant dropout in the sense that we can't compete with the banks from a funding perspective. They're much cheaper than us, and as a result, even though we've approved with the client, when they look at the pricing, we always recommend that the municipality takes the lowest and cheapest funding and not necessarily the most. So it might happen in some instances that as a result of that, they don't take our facilities, they afford cheaper pricing. So those factors will then result in that disparity between disbursement and approval. But as you correctly noted, that the commitment and the disbursement generally move in tandem, because once committed, it means it's in set for disbursement and those will move in tandem. Paul, I think there was a question. Can you just explain on our rural program as to what we've been doing there?
Thanks, CE. Honorable members, as you may have picked up from the annual report, the shift that was made by the board from local economic development to rural development, focusing the bank, came about towards the end of 2009. And that was following the State of the Nation address, where the President did indicate the priority areas for 9-10, and rural development being very high on the agenda. And the formation of the rural development division focused it within the mandate of the bank, driven by infrastructure development. And as one may pick up from the annual report, the division was focused on preparing, implementing economic and institutional turnaround strategies in rural municipalities, but also assisting rural municipalities to identify, prepare, and implement social and economic infrastructure. This strategy has been, in earnest, implemented since April last year, and it has focused on assisting those municipalities to identify projects around the entire project cycle. We set ourselves a target of 550 projects to be identified and to be included in the IDPs, and making sure that these projects, feasibility studies are conducted, technical reports are put in place to ensure that the rural municipalities are supported in fast-tracking infrastructure development. One of the things that one will also pick up, honorable members, in the annual report is the DBSA's efforts towards coming up with new instruments to support funding of projects in rural municipalities, and one of them is the MIG front-loading instrument, which is explained in the annual report, where we're saying that we need to assess the amount of MIGs available to a rural municipality over the MTF, and using that as an opportunity to front-load funding to the rural municipalities to shorten the project cycle. In that regard, we saw us providing funding to rural municipalities that would come through over a period of 3 years upfront for them to implement projects. But also in the other report, we did indicate our support in terms of eradication of unsafe and mud schools. In the Eastern Cape, for example, we assisted the Provincial Department of Education there with project management and technical support in that financial year to eradicate 30 schools, 30 new schools built with the new technology, looking at sustainable technologies. And the CE did indicate earlier that we are now looking at a bigger program, a national program for rolling out initiatives to eradicate unsafe and mud schools, and discussions with the National Department of Education are ongoing. We also have assisted a number of rural municipalities, Kukam is one of those, where we had serious governance challenges leading to a number of challenges with the quality of water, loss of lives, and funding set aside to the tune of 10 million to assist the municipality to deal with governance aspects, but also to deal with the water needs, accessing groundwater. Members of this committee may have picked up that we assisted them to construct 16 new boreholes and to equip 11 boreholes that had been drilled and they were not equipped. And all of those are now connected to the mains, and the municipality is able to access water. So the number of initiatives that we are looking at, we have selected 55 rural municipalities that we are giving targeted support and ensuring that we assist both in terms of technical but also in fast-tracking the eradication of backlogs. Lastly, Chair, on the issue of skills development and how we are looking at assisting increasing our outreach in terms of skills development, one of the things that honorable members will see in the report is the new programs that we're using to extend our skills development initiatives to municipalities. The operations and maintenance, the CE did mention that earlier, where we are recruiting and training apprentices up to the stage of trade testing for them to be able to
acquire certification. What we have done is to target Section 13 graduates from FET colleges. Where we're sitting now, we have targeted 260 of those, and these have been deployed in a number of rural municipalities that do have capacity constraints. But with it also, we've targeted officials, existing officials, through recognition of prior learning, 190 of those that we are assisting to prepare for trade testing. We are estimating that by the end of next month, about 100 will pass out after completing their trade testing. And through these initiatives, honorable members, we believe that we have opportunity also to extend this program beyond the current municipalities, probably also to double it if funding allows. Thanks, Chair.
So I think the deployees under the fund are actually quite expensive. They're not just limited to so much. We deal with public works, where, as indicated by Paul Chibuka, we've got another 200 that are deployed. Over and above the YPs, over and above the engineers and the finance team, that's a totally different category altogether. Because we recognize that, you know, in some municipalities, they don't need an engineer, you know, to fix or to stop water leakages. They need somebody capable, which you define as being an artisan. And we're training those, because I think over the years, we've lost a lot of artisans. Some have emigrated. We're trying to replace that. So we've now got a program that's in place. So the total deployed force in the fund at the moment totals what, including everything?
About 750.
750 people, all of them qualified, and on top of that, we put YPs. On the question of rural development, I think you know, the term can lend itself to, it can be abused by an institution in terms of us saying we're doing rural development. We may not be, because such a broad terminology, as you correctly pointed. But if you look at the development fund, you know, one could argue that most of what you do in there has got to do with rural communities and extension, because it's aimed and predicated at upliftment of the life and style of people in there. It's about developing communities, and therefore they happen to be rural. Therefore, you could say it's rural development. They need water, they need sanitation, they need economic projects and programs, they need tourism. We look at all aspects of it, and we've got quite a few of them that we're doing in there. And some people would think about focus on agriculture. We work very well with the land bank in terms of other areas. We're assisting them to advance some of the programs that they do where we possibly can, both in terms of assisting them on risk management, assisting them on monitoring as well. We work in partnership with the land bank as well.
Okay. That's Honorable Van Rooyen, followed by Honorable Liang.
Now, Chair, thank you very much. Now, I'm just getting in chair to check my understanding of the submission made by the CEO, not necessarily that thing, Tony, on the issue of the disparities that prevalent on the approvals and commitment. One key reason cited, something that I want to confirm if I understood it correctly, is mainly because of some of the offerings by the bank are not taken by the client, because the commercial bank tend to make better offers to clients as compared to our institution. Is that correct? And if it's correct, can you please shed some more light on that? Is it because of high interest rates, and how is that helping our developmental agenda, and how is that making our municipalities, more especially poor municipalities, I mean, susceptible to high interest, susceptible to manipulation or maybe exposure to practices by some of these commercial banks, and obviously denying them an opportunity to access or to tap into what is available in the market. Okay, can you please give some more indication on what do you mean by that, if my understanding is correct?
Okay. Thank you. Can you write it down? Honorable Dr. Lien.
Sir, to no way, then, Yanni. You know, I'm prompted by the continuous reflection on the MIG. You know, this MIG thing is not making me happy because it is perceived to be carrying a number of activities that should be addressing serious problems at a municipal level. One, the sport facility development. At no stage where you'll come across a municipality that will address the challenges in relation with sport facilities there. They will do any other thing to say, you know, how do you prioritize sport on top of other infrastructure challenges? And once that question, Honorable Tubazana, is asked in a public meeting, being a parliamentarian, you are challenging municipality, and then that person says, that councillor says, do you think, member of parliament, it would be proper for us to prioritize sport when people do not have water, you know, don't have access roads? So it means the issue of keeping the sport facility development funding within MIG is a perpetual and continuous challenge in relation to the development of rural sport facilities. They are not there. They will never be there under MIG. I've been saying this even to the minister Godan about this. I think you were there, Deputy Minister, when it was said, no, you'll have to raise this to the Minister of Sport. I mean, that was just passing the buck. Because Minister of Sport doesn't have funding for sport facilities himself. There's not a single cent that has been dedicated for sport facilities in the budget of the Tubarendo Sport. So, yeah, Tunuga and Donyanis. And then secondly, the issue of water infrastructure. You have a district municipality which is actually a water service provider for 7 to 10 municipalities. And in all these local municipalities, they are looking upon the district municipality to deal with water issues. And people are asking for water from the local municipalities. And those local municipalities are rendered useless just because of that. To say, no, there is no need for this municipality. Where you will get a lack of capacity, even to the city municipality, you can get to overcome the city municipality in Umdata, where infrastructure has decayed there. There is underdevelopment in the former Transkei area just because of the incapacity at the level of the district municipalities. And then when we sit around this table, we are getting fancy reports about capacity building, infrastructure funding, increase in the infrastructure, when there is no infrastructure in the rural area. I mean, it's an issue, CEO, that you will think, even this IDP thing, it doesn't work. It's not real, this IDP thing. You will be told that in a particular ward there is an IDP meeting. You go and attend that meeting. People will just list a glossary of their issues that will be prioritized for development. And the municipality will never come back to say, this is what we are going to do. And if you can say, no, that is not correct, there is an IGP for ward number so and so. Take, for instance, the case of the municipality. You say, one ward where an IGP was ever implemented. It has never been there.
But the councillor will say, when the toy is coming from a particular area, that no, all these issues that you are raising are issues that are covered in the IDP of the next financial year. Whereas the issues that were not covered in the IDPs of the past 10 years have not been addressed. I mean, I think UDBSA must come up clean and expose our institution so that you can assist them. If you want to assist them, you must first demonstrate that here there is no capacity. You are failing to do 1, 2, 3, 4, even if you take over the facilitation of that. It's not right. It does not assist the government. I mean, it's actually perpetuating the underdevelopment by the look of things. I really fail to understand, Deputy Minister, this continuous allocation of the MIG. I don't know whether this MIG funding is spent correctly. And if you are looking at the spending budget, okay, they do spend this, but where is the impact, the outcome of that, of such spending? Thank you.
Over to you, Mr. Baloyi, then over to the chair.
Chair, firstly, I would want just to remind members of the mandate of the bank. I know our frustrations go beyond the mandate of the bank. It would be unfair to expect the bank to be able to answer some of the questions that otherwise should be dealt with the relevant structures that are attached to this. Again, I did indicate that the bank intervenes and the bank discharges its mandate at the request of the municipalities in that sphere of government. And when we talk about the municipal infrastructure grant, the only role of the bank is actually the facilitation in terms of providing the capacity for those municipalities, because the municipalities would apply for municipal infrastructure grant through the necessary channel, and then the bank will play its role in terms of assisting it with capacity building only where it has been requested. I would request that members do not want to superimpose the bank in municipalities, because you're going to find Mr. Baloyi exceeding his mandate in the process. But the first one, Chair, that I wanted to talk to was with regards to, and the other one was with regards to the IDP. That resides precisely with the municipalities, and I don't think the bank would also be in a position to respond to that one. And I would call for your protection that we are not called upon to respond to that one. Perhaps the other general thing also that one might actually request is that in its oversight, the committee might just want to select some of the projects that the DBSA is involved in. And just take time to actually convince itself that those few projects, because the projects that are in the report are tangible projects, are projects that the committee can visit and that the committee can actually be able to really get the feel of what the intervention has achieved. And I can attest, Chairperson, that all the ones that are written here, the committee is at liberty to really test. I would want to agree that there are those areas where municipalities haven't called upon the DBSA to intervene, and there might be lack of service delivery in those areas, and there also might be inability to implement the IDPs and all sorts of things. But where the projects that are reflected in the annual report are projects that the committee at random can actually be able to visit and ensure that they take the chief executive and his officials to those projects to really get the feel on the ground of those projects. And as I've indicated, that a municipal infrastructure grant is governed by the law that allocates it at the request of the municipalities. And whether you would recall that during the World Cup, some of the MIG, there was a particular grant that was given to municipalities to develop sports facilities. But in terms of the municipal infrastructure grant, it is entirely at the behest of those municipalities to decide what infrastructure is a priority in those municipalities. And if the Department of Sports does not have the required resources to be able to augment the sports facilities, and the municipalities don't see this as a priority, I think we actually need to find a way of making sure that the development of sports facilities, but we cannot decide for municipalities which one is a priority, as Dr. Liang has already and correctly pointed out, that the municipality will say in their order of priority, water is a priority to sport. In their order of priority, the provision of roads and that's why they will have requested the municipal infrastructure grant to go to the municipality. And when the bank comes there, they can't say, no, instead of building the road, you're supposed to be building the sports facility. But they will assist them in giving them the support and the necessary expertise and project management for what they have applied for in terms of the bank's mandate. Paul, you want to respond to the question again with regards to approvals and commitments and disbursements, and also your comparison to... But also to say, Chair, the point that the Chief Executive made with regards to their uncompetitiveness with the commercial banks, I think it's a matter that is receiving attention. Because if banks have the luxury of receiving deposits from us as a client, and then the banks are able to give us meager returns on our investment, but the ability to be able to then charge competitive interest rates to the people they lend to, that places them at a different level with the development finance institutions, and hence government has reviewed, and we need to be looking at the funding models of our development institutions, but also the cost structure of our development institutions. It's one of the things that government is currently working on to see how best, and as Mr. Maloya has correctly pointed out, that besides the finance that is given in the form of loans, but the technical support that goes to those municipalities actually is in addition to the loan. So we find that the technical support that has been given to them, which comes free, is actually worth far more than a lower interest rate lending that could have been given to them that they would be able to get from an institution, and that from the commercial institutions. But Mr. Maloy will explain. But this is one of the things that, in trying to see that our development finance institutions talk to our developmental agenda as a country, the government is actually looking at, and they are currently a process is underway to address the issue of our development finance institution as a whole.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. I think if I was to put it more subtly, we have to borrow money. The government doesn't give us money to lend to municipalities. We have to go on the market and borrow from the bank, from the insurance industry, to borrow from them and then fund municipalities. That's always been how we've been done. We've been able to do that. And therefore, it's inconceivable that I can go and borrow from an insurance company or from a bank, and then when we go to fund the same client, I can be cheaper than them. Marginally, I'll always be a little bit more expensive than they do. Now, we've recognized that over the years, we've been able to pass on the benefits because we're not chasing profit as a bank. But with the financial crisis, that cap moved significantly upwards, creating a further, I think, cost onto our books, which we can't absorb. And as a result, you know, we're in this situation where we have to review with the Minister of Finance how do we again get to a point where we can pass on the benefits of cheaper funding to the banks, and that's under discussion, as the Minister correctly pointed. I believe that as a bank, what we need to recognize is a lot of what the banks ultimately finance in the municipalities arises from the work that DBSA does for municipalities free of charge. And it's a huge expenditure for that matter. And the banks then simply charge a margin on top of that. Everybody ignores the amount of fund that we spend. If you take that amount of money that we spend relative to the discount they're getting from the bank, ours is actually quite significant. And we choose to do it that way because they're getting much more material benefits than purely the discount that they may get from the bank. Because without us doing that work, they will not be able to take any products to the market for funding. So we benefit, I think, the municipality, the financial sector, everybody in that context. But we've often said that if we take the amount of expenditure that we've given, whether it's to KZN, whether it's in Mpumalanga, in terms of financial assistance, grants, technical expertise, for them to bring project to fruition as part and parcel of the cost that we have incurred and charged to municipalities, I think the comparison would be completely different. If the banks had to do that work first, they would never be able to pass on the current discount that they do. But because they don't have to, they're getting the benefit of what the bank has utilized. That benefit is discounted, I think, in terms of perception. But I think it is significant and benefits the municipalities quite significantly for that bank.
Van Ryan?
I was a bit considering before I raised my hand. I was worried that you might say it's tonic and food. Basically, I just wanted to check how do you relate with our central bank as a banker for banks. I mean, what's your relation with the central bank in terms of. Because I just wanted to check this aspect of your borrowing. Do you borrow from the central bank and what is happening? Because you said you borrow from banks and you borrow from funds. So it says obviously you need to finance the cost of that borrowing and hence your interests are higher than commercial bank. Can I check on your relationship with the central bank?
Sure, we don't, as I said, receive any funding from government nor from the Reserve Bank. We don't fall under their ambit of governance. We govern directly by the Minister of Finance, who acts as our governor. Therefore, we don't access the funding window that traditionally banks, private banks and other institutions would access. We don't have access to that window of funding from the Reserve Bank.
Maybe before Honorable Leyange makes a follow-up, just a few comments. On a lighter note, I've been looking at your very closely annual report, and I must commend you on your transparency, because you also reflect on those who are about to go on pension. Braluta, I can see you on your way out. Yeah. I'm not instigating anything. I'm just looking. I just say, you know, what is important is that for me, you are demonstrating that age can never be a limit to work. Only celebrities will not reveal their age. So it means executives in DBSA and directors, non-executives and executives, they are not celebrities. That's why they can tell us their age. I hope members of parliament will follow the example. Yeah, now, the issue that I think Honorable Liang, without interpreting him or misinterpreting him, is that I hear what the committee say
is the committee is basically saying, yes, we appreciate the work that you are doing. We appreciate the fact that you would intervene the invitation. But in your report, tell us even the things that you think Parliament should actually assist at that level. The Deputy Minister has actually said, we can identify and isolate issues that we would want or projects that we want to make a follow-up on. But at the end of the day, I think as you give the support, you are also making certain observations. And those observations should be shared with the community so that we are able to say, from here, in order to assist the municipalities and to supplement or complement the work that you are doing. Because you see, this is the heart of, or the center of delivery. And especially when we speak about disadvantaged communities, people who stand to benefit out of this new political dispensation are people who are in the far-flung areas of our country, rural municipalities, townships, and so on and so forth. And therefore, your intervention is more around basic services and the capacity for municipalities to deliver basic services as they'll be captured within the IDP. Now, if we as politicians were able to stand in Parliament and say, in the last 16 years of democracy, we've been able to provide clean water to 93% of the population. That is not without your intervention. It is part of the responsibility that your mandate allows you to actually participate and make it possible for the municipalities to achieve those goals. And we need to appreciate that. And I think your intervention has gone a long way in making sure that we move from 1994 household to almost 93%. If you go to housing, we say over 10 million people have got a permanent address today. They can safely say we are going home, and you can trace them. Even if it's in villages where you may not actually have an address, a certain number, but they'll tell you how much the molar link you have already. That's the kind of intervention that Comrade Zieng is talking about. And I can go on and on about the interventions that you have made in assisting the municipalities. But I must warn you that even next time when you come here, if you can speak about access, successes and achievements in rural areas and communities at the level of municipalities, and there's no sports field that has been constructed or built, you never come out of this meeting with Mr. Liang and not saying anything about it. You know, his heart is right, is at the right place. So, in short, I think his intervention seeks to say, tell us where we must begin to focus as Parliament. Not to say we don't know, but this interaction should help us to begin to zoom in one direction, all of us. So I thought I should just make those few observations, Honorable Deputy Minister, in terms of the presentation. Of course, the issue of cost to capacity. You know, anything that any financial institution or development finance, including commercial banks, they work through structures. And one of those structures is called credit committees. And that's where the problem lies. Whether you've got development economists in there or not, we don't want to get into that. But if a project is put in front of the credit committee, and the first question that will then be asked is, will Nedbank look at this thing? What would be Investec's view on this project? That is a problem. If the credit committee can start operating in that mode. And I think all what we are saying as a committee is that you, as the top executives of the bank, you should at all times be aware and alive to the mandate. The challenges that you have, because you also have to go into the market and raise capital, and you have got to pay interest and all those kind of things. is what should be addressed in the PFI forum, which is resident in National Treasury, to say, how do we actually begin to redirect or to strengthen the role of PFI in relation to the mandate and the focus of the state, which is a developmental state. And in the context of the 2010-2012 budget, what is it that the State of the Nation address says? 2011 is a year of job creation. Of course, we understand your mandate is that of making sure that development takes place. But there can't be development without what we'll call people's entitlement in economic terms. That would be education, health, jobs. They're entitled to those things. It's not like it's a favor. So I thought, we don't know what happens in the boardrooms. We don't know what the credit committee's thinking would be. But from the little things that we've provided here in terms of the approvals, in terms of the impact on disbursement, the impact of development, it's quite clear that the bank is trying to do something. But you need to remain conscious of the fact that your mandate is not that of Investec. Not that we approve that Investec and others should actually be absorbed from the responsibilities of development in this country, because they operate in here, they take deposits from the same people that seek to be uplifted now. And I think that's a broader challenge that we have to address in the financial sector transformation. Honorable Luyenge?
I think you have covered me well. And I'm not going to repeat what I wanted to say, because you have correctly put my feeling about this. Because I really thought DBSA would utilize the information that they get from us in terms of assessing the applications from the various municipalities. If they want funding for a particular project, and the committee has actually said a particular project in place number so and so in an area, it collapsed and it was made to be well known that this is a DBSA project, it's a special project. When people want to squander money in the municipalities, they say, no, this is a special project. It's for 6 months, it's funded by DBSA. It doesn't fall, it's not part of our own activities. And then they employ their friends and relatives, you know. And all of a sudden, they don't pay those people. I think this information that we're giving you, because I'm making examples of leaving projects that were funded by DBSA. And then when it gets into the municipalities, they'll say, no, it's from Water Affairs, yes, but it's funded by DBSA. It's a special one. And people are not paid. People will get into our constituency offices wearing green jackets to say we have been working in this project. We are not paid. Those are water infrastructure projects. That's why I was asking Chairperson as to what mode of monitoring and evaluation that is being done by DBSA. Because you will fund, all of a sudden there is no change on the ground. Because I believe that you are also coming from where I come from, in your own rural areas. Do you see what you are funding? You fund the municipality. When you look at the impact and the outcome of that, it is not there. It was on those basis, as we have said, that you are asking these. And to say, if you want us to fund, we are training you on this IDP program, can you give us more examples of where this capacity that we are giving you is assisting you in terms of your achievement, so that you can compare the information that we are giving you, or do inspection in locals to say, okay, we want to go and see now. So thank you, Chef.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Just 1 minute to the Deputy Minister. Chair, I'm just worried about the board attendance record. It's very poor. Honorable Minister, you have got so many board members, and there, within your board members, there are those which are not allocated to any committee, and the attendance is so bad for most of the board members. But for the Human Resource Committee, it is really worse. It's only the CEO who attends and the chair. So are you paying them a return fee or do you pay them for the meeting attended? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. The last question is a difficult one. But I'll let the chief executive explain why people don't attend meetings and submit their report. But members are paid per meeting. That is true. If people don't attend meetings, they don't get paid for meetings they did not attend. But also, it's not all members that get paid for meetings, because those that represent government departments like COCTA and Treasury, those people, I mean, they are non-attendants or attendants, actually. But it's important for the functioning of the board that people attend meetings. We will be appraised as to what are the reasons for attendance for some of them. Chair, again, going back to the issue of following up on funding, I think it's an important point. And again, I would want to urge the committee to partner with us in visiting some of the projects. Particularly in Dr. Liyenge's province, page 34 and 35, talks to a number of pilot projects in this area. And I would, in due course, want to know from Dr. Liyenge whether these are also not functional, because the other one is King Sabata Dalijabo pilot project, the other one is Dreamfields project in Elliot Dale, and Drink Office Dreamfields. So, I mean, these are just but a few of them, and it would be interesting to hear whether, I mean, we have a similar situation in those as well. And the reason why they are written here is just to give members a taste of some of the things that are happening, but there are more projects that the committee can just identify at random, and particularly if there are those that are failing. I think those are the ones that should actually be identified and visited, so that we are also able to, with the support that municipalities are given, as I've indicated, it's support during the planning, it's support during the implementation, it is support also post-implementation, and also leaving the necessary capacity, as we've indicated, to be able to do further projects, because the municipalities should not only rely on the DBSA. The municipalities in themselves are structures that should be fully functional. If they are not functional at a political level, we have a responsibility. If they are not functional at the administrative level, again, we have a responsibility as government. But in future, Chair, when the committee sits again with the DBSA Act and the report going forward, if we look at what the bank had set out to do in the corporate plan that was submitted, and when we report, the bank will report on that, but when the committee then makes recommendations, which I would imagine the committee would also do, the bank would then look at how best those recommendations can be accommodated within its given mandate at the moment, and should we require a change of mandate, then we would come back to the committee.
To respond. But I think we've got a very thin, not all board members would attend the RAM call. There's only probably a few selects that we had. And I think we lost a few members during the year under review. And as a result, we ended up with probably a very thin membership. We've since reviewed that, and we've included, I think, two ladies, and then we should see that improving going forward. Also, this committee does not sit as regularly as other committees, because sometimes it tends to be ad hoc, but we note the comments, and we will try and improve on the attendance. And Chair, if I may end by saying that, you know, we take quite seriously the comments and the feedback from the committee, and that we'll do our best to try and improve and take the advice that we're getting, because that's who we are. As a development fund institution, our role is to listen and to take advice and input, and then hopefully when we come back, we can demonstrate that we did listen and that we have improved on the areas that the members have highlighted to us. It's the best that we could do, Chair.
And to improve attendance, Madam, did you hear that women have been included? Because women don't miss meetings.
Yeah, no, I think that's on the issue of attendance. I hear what you're saying, CEO. You know that body is the custodian of policy. And it's not about whether they get remunerated or not remunerated per sitting. It is how they help you as the executive in terms of policy direction and policy implementation, because they are basically the shareholders' representatives. I don't want to say much, but I think it's a point that must be taken very seriously by board members themselves. If you are unable to discharge your fiduciary responsibility, then you're not fit to be in that structure. But the deputy minister is here. He's probably the deputy governor of the bank, because the governor is there. So we are raising this matter so that it's properly looked into. So that people don't take their responsibility as if it's one of those things that they have to do. And because there's no television cameras, when you see it, that reports what your decisions are, like you announce the appreciation or the depreciation of the interest rate, people don't come. But the job that they've been assigned to carry out, they should carry that job out to assist you. So I thought I should just make that point very, very clear. Yes. And also I must say, we have not interacted with you regularly as the committee. To a point where sometimes we tend to think that you are not one of those institutions that are directly related to National Treasury. I had a meeting with the AG yesterday, and I looked at a number of issues that they were raising, and the DBSA was not in their report. And they say, we need to talk to you about the institutions that are related to National Treasury. And as I went through the list, DBS is not there. They had forgotten you. Or maybe it's because you are doing your work in such a way that they can't report anything, which I doubt. Okay, honorable members, deputy minister, anything from your side and the CEO?
No, Chair, just to thank the committee for the opportunity. And again, the point you made earlier regarding the number of times we have engaged. In fact, when the invitation was received, the DBSA was not too sure, because in the past, the bank has only appeared before the Select Committee on Finance because of the work that they do in the local government sphere. But in terms of their reporting line, and that's one of the points I thought I was going to make at the end, to request that perhaps in future, so that we do not have a situation where the Select Committee calls the DBSA again to account in future, and I did speak to the committee clerk to find out whether it would not be possible to request that in future we have a joint meeting with the Select Committee, so that because if they are called again, they will have to come back to the Select Committee, because the Select Committee feels that the work they do in local government is critical in their area of oversight. So, but once again, Chair, to thank the opportunity to appear before the committee, and hope that in future those areas where the committee still has concerns, and the report to Parliament will also assist us in those areas in terms of your recommendations that we might actually have to look at going forward. But thanks for the opportunity once again. Thank you.
Well,
No, I think I must just appreciate your last comment, Deputy Minister. In fact, indeed, that's how we prefer to work. Because in a joint system, you also deal with both micro and macro issues, which we will not have detailed in terms of our standing committee. So we will liaise with our colleagues in the appropriation so that we have a common interaction, where possible, not at all times. But thank you very much for making time and honoring the invitation, even if you're a little bit concerned whether it's appropriation or standing committee on finance, but you're here. Thank you very much. And thanks for all of you for being with us today. I think this meeting stands adjourned until you are called again. Honorable members, there's one issue. You can just remain behind. Let's take a next break of about 10 minutes, then we'll come back.
5 minutes.
Okay. Maybe the method doesn't require a quorum, but I think it does. I don't know how to process this matter, but because of time constraints, we thought with the whip we should actually try to bring this matter to the committee's attention. It is in a matter, it is a matter that comes from the Committee on Private Members' Interest, something like that. But it's a request for comment on a private member's legislative proposal of Honorable Davidson. Which seeks to bring into Parliament a bill on how should members of the public, not public representatives, interact in terms of business activity, in short. I don't know if honorable members have had the opportunity to see this. It has been circulating for quite some time. We've got to make our own views known before the matter is taken forward by the relevant committee. So we're just supposed to express our own opinion on this matter. But it's quite an involved subject. It's quite an involved subject. So something that you can treat very lightly. So the delay, I am not very sure why we delayed in actually making this contribution, because I think it was tabled last year, October. So I thought I should just bring it to attention, and if we are unable to make a comment, that should be our view as the committee, not even a view, but either we request for an extension to look into the matter, give you 5 minutes to go through it, 10 minutes.
Yes. Madame?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as you have indicated to us, this is very... If we just taking it as a light matter, if it's not light. You know, Chair, when people, they establish companies or shareholders, they need some confidentiality. And if you go through this document quickly, and you will see towards the end, unsuccessful contracting companies may have bidded for that particular service or tender. It says they've got the right to ask for the information for the people. I mean, can it be given more time and apply our minds and see how does this affect members themselves? It could be a member from, even if it's from the opposition. I mean, because it means if I'm an office bearer, maybe somehow, somewhere within this document, it says my son does not have the right to do so. Can we give him more time and read this and analyze it and apply our mind?
Mianga?
I fully concur with that notion, Chair, in the light of the fact that really this is a broad initiative that actually cuts across all sectors and levels of people, because the political party membership now exonerating individuals not to participate in business when people fought for these opportunities all of a sudden. Now you say you must not be part of a political party. So it's something that needs to be debated more. I fully concur with the submission by one of the members. Thank you.
Agreed. Yes.
Yeah, as much as I agree, Chair, the result of the matter is that this issue is not coming before us for the first time. I think it was presented last year. So I think we will just have to be careful as to the reason why we want to defer this matter for further consultation, you know, if it was tabled last year. So to me, it's of concern, you know. But from where I am, of course, not... Or maybe shooting down the submission made by members. I don't understand why we need to review the current provisions that are there in the Act, because from where I am, with my little knowledge around aspects of procurement, I think the current legislation caters extensively for such a development. And maybe we might divide we debate the enforcement thereof. But from where I am, I really don't see any I mean the need for us to tamper with that particular provision, you know. But as requested by members, maybe let's give political parties more time, I mean, to look into this, because their members will be affected. But I'm just saying, let's also try to concretize on our reasons. Because this issue has been tabled to us, I mean, long time ago. But also people were expecting us to respond yesterday.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how all these things will be taken for. Thank you.
Okay.
Maybe the easy way out is we had to respond yesterday. We haven't got a quorum yet. So basically we can't do anything. And maybe if privately ask for more time, let's get it. But if we don't get it,
nothing we can do about it. Well, it doesn't take us very far from what the committee secretary is saying, that they've given us until late this afternoon to respond. But I think the proposal that we are the general feeling, let me put it that way, of members in the committee, is that the matter requires more time, and it's not just a committee matter, but from our side, it will be important that we request for an extension to deal with this matter, so that can have more and broader consultation with the committee on the matter. and the chair will write a letter to the chairperson of this committee this afternoon.
And also to add on what you just said, Chair, that you know, if you look at what needs to be discussed, what is being said by Honourable Davidson, you on the other hand, there is amendment of the triple BEE. Now, if you take the two, and you are not clued up about these amendments as to how far they've gone, how far they are aligned with what is being proposed by this by Honourable Davidson, and you continue with the matter, I think it's concrete enough to say if those two processes are going parallel, we need to be clued up exactly what is the content of both.
Okay, agreed, Honourable Members. You are late.
Yeah.
We'll see in the house. Tomorrow's meeting is a Thursday. Right there, tomorrow is a Sunday. What are we doing tomorrow?